Mykonos, the island where Shirley Valentine dreamed, is like no other in Greece. There is nowhere else in the entire archipelago which has a shop dedicated to the sale of every brand and flavour of condom known to man, and no other place this end of the Mediterranean where drag queens wander the streets freely. The first Starbucks outside Athens opened here. It's like that peculiar relative every family has, who insists on popping up at weddings, dressed in a particularly alternative style. But the difference is that everyone loves Mykonos. It's gay, it's straight, it's whatever you want it to be, but whatever that is, there is one thing this island can never be accused of, and that is being dull. It's a fifth the size of Zakynthos, with a quarter of the population, and yet still receives over 1 million visitors every year. But Mykonos, with its beautiful people, designer boutiques, and chic eateries, unlike its bigger Ionian counterpart, has somehow retained that charm and style of its narrow lanes and brilliant white buildings, distancing unseemly tourist venues to its extremities. Property prices here are some of the highest in Greece. It was the French who instigated the phenomenon of Mykonos at the end of the 19th century. The French School of Archaeology in Athens, after signing an agreement with the Greek government in 1873, arrived in mustachioed, solar-toped splendour to begin the excavations on neighbouring Delos that would reveal the sanctuary of Apollo and other rich discoveries that people nowadays take for granted. In antiquity, Delos was the most important of all the islands, and Mykonos lay inconsequentially in its shadow. How the tables have turned. Just as the archaeologists used Mykonos as a base for Delos, so does everybody to this day. Delos remains uninhabited. Shortly after the archaeologists set to work, the cruise ships began to arrive, loaded with educationally minded tourists, followed, not long after, by rich Athenians and a procession of artists, poets, and writers, and finally, the rest of us succumbed to the island's magic spell. In the old days, I suspect Mykonos was more of a retreat that gathered to its bosom an eclectic and varied bunch. Now it is a sophisticated promised land of pleasure, and the laissez-faire atmosphere that pervades still attracts a diverse assortment of characters to its shores. It is for that reason very un-Greek, tolerating behaviour that would be unacceptable anywhere else in this most conservative of countries. 30 years ago, Lawrence Durrell wrote that Mykonos was finished, crowded out. The island has certainly grown and matured in a very business-like way. In a few years, for example, it would be possible to imagine the capital Hora stretching the entire length of the west coast, from Korphos Bay in the south to Tourlos Bay in the north. I'm not saying Mykonos is spoiled, but its nature has changed. One of the saddest signs of this march of time is the demise of the Yacht Club. This delightful spot on the edge of the old port was nothing more than a crumbling concrete garage, a record player, a blocked bog, and a few battered lights swinging above a comprehensively equipped bar. Friends tell me it catered for the hardened partygoer, desirous that night should never end and only shut when the final glass was emptied and the last drunkard staggered home. I was staying in a family-run hotel owned by an old friend, Christina, who returned to Greece after a childhood spent in orderly Switzerland, where she climbed out of a bedroom window one day and ran off to India. Seeing the light after she fell out of love following the Guru Trail, she caught a plane to Mykonos with 50 drachmas to her name and a carpet bag with all her worldly possessions in it. She never looked back, and when I arrived was out of sorts because Patrick, her pet African grey parrot, had discovered the freedom of the skies and done a sort of Ronnie Biggs from Wandsworth Prison. You know, he was the only man who ever flew out of my bedroom. Legend has it that Mykonos was the son of Aeneas, king of Delos, and that he was the island's first settler. From early times, the place was closely connected with the worship of Dionysus, which could explain its reputation for hard partying. It is said to have a Mykonian neighbour is to have the neighbour from hell, while the term to arrive like a Mykonian meant that you had probably gate-crashed. When the giants, or gigantes, a disharmonious bunch, attempted to remove Zeus and the rest of the gods from Mount Olympus, Heracles was called in to assist. He killed Alcyoneus, the leader, while the rest were dispatched in an unseemly fashion by various gods wielding an assortment of lightning bolts, islands, arrows, slugs of molten metal, and flaming torches. When the fighting was done and dusted, the story goes that Heracles then buried the giants under Mykonos. Heracles was a demigod and the original superhero, way before Batman was so much as a twinkle in Gotham City's eye. It was he who was first attributed with making the world a safer place to live. I imagine him as a great bear of a man, fearful of no one and no stranger to a party, the Russell Crowe of his day. But if we examine Heracles a bit closer, we may not, however, be quite so enamoured. Frankly, he was a disaster area. The hero was a serial adulterer, marrying four times, killing two of his wives and most of his children. Plutarch states in the Eroticos that he had so many male lovers that they were beyond counting, and when enslaved by Queen Omphale, he wore women's clothes and took to women's work, until he married her. He abandoned the Argonauts on their way to Colchis in a fit of pique. Jack the Ripper, at his worst, murdered 18 people. The demigod can account for 19 victims at best, and at worst, well, you lose count. The killing problem started at birth when his stepmother, Hera, slipped him a couple of serpents out of spite, which he strangled. After the serpents got it in the neck, he progressed to his music teacher, who dared to point out his mistakes. And amongst a host of others, various nephews and nieces, a few friends, an obstreperous wine grower, three kings, a lion, a hydra, a giant, some birds, and a monster at Troy all got the chop. You would not put Heracles next to your wife at a dinner party. He simply couldn't be trusted. Just as he is incapable of saying no to food, so the Spaniard is incapable of saying no to a party. He flew in from Hong Kong especially. It was good to have my sometime travelling companion back again. Visiting Mykonos alone would be a depressing experience otherwise. Being of rural ancestry, and as it was food-related, the Spaniard was not too upset when I explained to him that we were going to learn about the Hieras Fire. "Hieras what?" he said. "Hieras Fire," I replied, "the autumn slaughtering of pigs. You fatten the pig up over summer, and come October, rit!" as I dashed my finger across my throat. He pulled a face. I explained how pigs had been an important part of island life for thousands of years, because they are a valuable source of meat in winter. The Spaniard went a bit quiet. He was keener to find a host of celebs whose names he began to reel off with alarming recall. As usual, I had never heard of any of them, and reassured him it would be easier to find a pig than some groupie from Hello magazine. Besides, a farm animal was far more interesting. He perked up a lot when I started to talk about lucanica, sun-dried sausages, lusa, cured meat, and bubulo, tenderloins. But it wasn't that easy. Christina knew of a sow with a litter of piglets near her house and drove me there on the premise we could look for Patrick the Parrot on the way. We roared past fields of grazing donkeys and up into the hills until we came to a stone sty behind a wall. I could make out the beady black of an eye inside, but the pig was resolutely not for moving. It was too hot. The parrot didn't show either. I asked Jose at the Elysium Hotel, but no joy. "Darling, what would I want with a pig? I run a bar, not a farm. But we can make you a BLT if you like, with the finest marinated bacon in Greece." I tried the mayor's office in the grand building at the far end of the old harbour, which looked as if it had been plucked out of the Italian countryside without being asked. It was once the residence of the Russian consul general. I pressed them about pigs. They pressed me about tourist developments, water projects, and introduced me to the pelicans, the island's mascots, who were busy showing off to a group of Japanese tourists, but no pigs. My cousin, who produces musicals like the Italians do pasta, was visiting at the same time, with his extended family, which had grown to include the standard Mekonian fare of a Hollywood film producer, the arts editor of a well-known glossy magazine, a US federal prosecutor, and a 9-year-old air guitarist who wanted to be the next Jimmy Page. Not forgetting a jeep's worth of teenagers who spent most of the night clubbing and never surfaced till gone four every afternoon. "Come to dinner," he said. The Spaniard and I drove up to the large villa overlooking the harbour where they were staying. You couldn't get lost because I spotted my cousin, Gianni Versace from the neck up, Buddha from the neck down, a long way off, standing quite unabashed on top of a rock, talking earnestly on the phone to somewhere exotic like London, New York, Shanghai or Bournemouth. Wearing nothing but a bright orange towel, he cut quite a picture, looking alarmingly like Demis Roussos on release from a Hare Krishna institute. After a prolonged bear hug welcome, a bit like having a bouncy castle collapse on you, a large jug of margarita was produced. We sat on the terrace above the liner-filled bay, enjoying the warm evening, talking incongruously about San Francisco, pigs, and hazy memories of Studio 54. The attorney, still monosyllabic from the night before, suddenly awoke from his stupor and announced he knew where to find me a hog. We met Yori the following evening in a petrol station. Yori, wearing a sun hat pulled down over his eyes and a Hawaiian shirt, was a fount of information. "My friend Deminios is the man you are looking for," he told me. We coughed and spluttered our way in the dust stream behind his island-battered jeep, until we reached a huge, complicated-looking cactus that sprouted uncomfortably out of some enormous boulders. A cacophony of ducks and geese announced that we had arrived. Picking our way through vegetable patches and over a discarded fence, we reached a yard with a pine tree surrounded by whitewashed outhouses. Deminios, a large, Edwardian-looking character with a big, grey, walrus moustache, looked a fine figure in his peaked cap as he and his wife, Petrula, greeted us with tusk grins on the doorstep of their farmhouse. His family had emigrated from Santorini and lived on Mykonos for the last 600 years. Oblivious of the tourist whirlwind that howled outside, life of the couple continued as it had done for centuries, revolving around grazing sheep and goats and rearing pigs and birds for the table. They would have looked no more out of place in the shires of England than here in the quiet backwoods of Mykonos. We were ushered to a rickety table under the pine tree, as Petrula produced a bottle of ouzo and a generous plate of mostra, rusks piled high with kopanisti, cheese and chopped tomatoes. The old man reached up into the tree above and dragged an onion down from one of the many strings of vegetables that were hanging to dry on the branches. Deminios owned 3 pigs. "I have only girls' pigs. Their meat is not so fat, and she tastes nice, sir." "You cannot give them names," he grunted. "It makes them harder to kill come the cold winds of Ios Dimitrios in early November. You know, we have 2 sayings about the pigs. Whoever marries is happy for a day. Whoever slaughters his pig is happy for a year. And, excuse me, Moruzo, we also say that pork should be tasty as a walnut, as sweet as honey, and white as a nun's knickers." Petrula appeared, with a piece of loser wrapped in foil. I had to kick the Spaniard under the table as he almost started to dribble at the delicious thick aroma of cured meat that wafted across the table. Deminios cut great hunks of the stuff off with his pocket knife, slices of which he threatened at us on the end of his blade. "This is last year's meat. Good, eh? Come here as fire. We often kill 2 pigs. One we keep for the family, one we use for the celebrations. It's a big day. Everybody helps out. We start early in the morning, as there is much butchering to be done. First, we tie the legs, all very calm, and then lead her into the yard and hold her down, belly up. Then, grabbing the snout, make the sign of the cross, tick! In goes the knife, just like a buttonhole. But you need a young man to make the cut, so the pig doesn't know a thing. I'm too old now. In the evening, when everything is done, we bring out the wine and the celebration begins." Deminios shuffled off to find some shoes for his enormous feet, calling to Thanasis, his son. "Come, it is time to feed the animals." The pigs trotted coquettishly out of their sty as soon as they heard the rattle of the boy's bucket. They were not small. Come October, there'll be plenty of pork. Personable people, pigs. It is their expressive eyes and aria of grunts and squeaks that makes them human. They seem so pleased and happy to see us as they pranced about, tails jigging in the air. I could appreciate why Deminios never gave the trusting beasts a name, as I watched them chasing pieces of melon about their concrete yard on dainty stiletto-heeled trotters. The old man invited me back for Hiras Faya in a few weeks' time, but I had to decline, as I would be on my way north by then. Kalokeri, summer was gradually coming to an end.